Searching for the Same Light by Victoria P. Read by Night Tracer. Fandom, The Raven Cycle. Summary. Surprisingly, or maybe not, it's all Ronan's idea. When your name is just a hand I can never hold, everything I've ever believed in becomes magic. I think of lovers as trees growing to and from one another, searching for the same light. Warsan Shire. Everything is weird, Blue thinks. Or maybe not weird. She's always had a high threshold for weird, and it's only become higher with each new thing that happens. But different now that Ronan and Adam are something. She can admit to a small twinge of jealousy the first time she noticed the way they touch each other. Small touches that look unconscious, except for the way Adam relaxes a little with each one. And Ronan's mouth goes soft for a moment, like he thinks no one is looking. And it isn't jealousy about Adam, though other people might think that. She knows he's not her true love, whatever that means. Though she also knows she loves him. Loved them all. Her Raven boys. No, the jealousy is for the easy, thoughtless way they touch. They can, and probably do, kiss, and pet, and fuck, and oh, she's not going to imagine that, at least not in the house, where her thoughts might leak out for someone else to overhear. Without the least bit of worry that one of them is going to drop dead afterwards. At least, not because of that. She keeps promising herself she's going to stay strong and not call Gansey. But it's easy to make promises during the day, and much harder to keep them in the dark when she can't sleep. She's thrilled and grateful to have her mother back, but she's tired of her mother's sad, knowing looks whenever Gansey shows up at 300 Fox Way. She thinks it'd be easier to deal with if everyone wasn't so understanding. They've developed their own language of secret touches. Gansey's hand on her hand, or hip, or cheek. Her fingers on his wrist, his neck, his lips. But it's not enough. It'll never be enough. And sometimes it feels like it's burning her up inside. It's worse when they're in Cave's Water. She's not connected to it the way Adam and Ronan are, but she can feel it humming around her. Magic she's able to amplify or reflect, if never tap herself. Gansey pulls her behind a tree, her eyes bright and intent, and his hands giving down her hair, down over the rough laces of her shirt, and then warm against the skin of her back. "Oh, for fuck's sake, get a room!" Ronan shouts, having caught sight of them. There are no secrets here from him, or Adam. "Fuck you!" Blue snaps back, angrier with him than she has been in a while, because he gets to have Adam, and Cave's Water, and his dreams. And she gets to have stolen moments with Gansey's hands, and the knowledge that she could be the one who kills him. "Hey," Adam says. Ronan shakes his head and stalks towards them, pulling Adam behind him. "Kiss her," he says. Blue recoils, jerking her hand out of Gansey's. "Don't be stupid." "I'm not the one being stupid, Sergeant." He shoves Adam at her. "Go ahead." Adam gives Ronan a puzzled look, which clears after a brief moment. "Oh," he says, and Blue tenses. His lips are soft and warm, much warmer than Noah's were, but no less sweet against hers. And then he turns to Gansey and kisses him. Gansey looks Polax when Adam pulls away.
I don't.
Blue doesn't think she's ever seen him at loss for words before, but Ronan just laughs.
"You go to an all-boys prep school. Live the stereotype."
Yes. I guess there is that to consider. Gansey's expression goes from shock to thoughtful.
"Oh my god,"
Blue whispers, figuring it out. She glances at Adam, who gives her a small smile and a half shrug. He's already Cave's Water's hands and eyes. He could be her lips and Gansey's hands. For a little while, anyway.
"Jane."
Gansey shakes his head as if to clear it.
"Blue."
"Yes," she says, surprised that her voice doesn't shake at all.
"You do this for us?"
Gansey asks carefully, looking at each of them in turn. The word weighted like a vow.
"Yeah,"
Ronan answers, no less seriously, for all that he sounds nonchalant about it.
Yes, Adam says. But not here. Not here, Blue agrees quickly, remembering stories about kings marrying the land and dying to make summer come. They pile into the pig and ride back to Monmouth in fraught silence. The hair on Blue's arms prickle, the way it does before a thunderstorm, and their breath sounds loud in the silence. She flicks on the radio and flinches when the murder squash song comes on, but it breaks the tension a little. She lets out a nervous laugh and turns it off. But Ronan is already singing. For once, nobody tells him to shut up. Inside the apartment, Ronan leads Blue and Adam to Gandhi's bed. He gives her hand a brief, surprising squeeze before he lets go and gestures for her to sit. He positions Gandhi behind her and then settles in behind Adam himself. Blue takes a deep breath and licks her lips. Then she cups Adam's cheek with her left hand and reaches back to curl her right hand around the nape of Gandhi's neck. And Ronan already has his mouth pressed against the curve of Adam's throat when Adam leans in to kiss her again, this time with more heat and urgency, his tongue licking at the seam of her lips. She opens to him and gasps when his tongue touches hers. Gandhi's hands slid up under her shirt to cup her breasts, warm and strong and sure, his thumbs brushing her nipples, sending shockwaves of heat through her. She leans back against him, and Adam stops kissing her to kiss Gandhi. She has a front row seat for it this time, and while it's not something she's ever thought about, it's more beautiful than she would have expected. She tears her gaze away to meet Ronan's. His eyes are heavy-lidded and dark, his mouth curved in a wicked smile before he bares his teeth and sinks them into the place where Adam's neck meets his shoulder. Adam makes a low, gasping sound and pulls away from Gandhi, his lips red and shiny. He rests his forehead on Blue's shoulder, breathing heavily, and she strokes her hand through his hair, light and soft as dandelion fluff against her fingertips, and just as full of wishes. Her eyelids are heavy and she lets them close, the darkness magnifying the sensations of Adam's lips and Gandhi's hands on her skin, amplifying the sound of their breathing and the small, hungry noises they all make, barely audible of the thundering of her own heart, the desperate rush of blood and desire in her veins. Gandhi's hand slides down to her thigh and then up the inside of her leg. She opens her knee so he can cup her through her leggings. She opens her eyes when Adam and Ronan are sharing deep, messy kisses, and Ronan's hand on Adam's fly mimics Gandhi's hand between her legs. The similarity of it makes her laugh, and they all look at her, startled and dizzy-eyed. "We've got a couple of Casanovas here," she says to Adam, reeling him in for a kiss of her own. He laughs into her mouth and she smiles when he trades her kiss for Gansey's. She drops her hand to Gansey's thigh, tightening her grip, the sensations coursing through her as his fingers work between her legs. The tension builds inside her and she wishes they weren't separated by the layers of her clothing, but Adam kisses her again before she can think too much about the strangeness of the situation and the necessity for it. She rolls her hips, reaching for the sensations Gansey's producing with his hand, gasping into Adam's mouth when the tension inside her breaks and her whole body pulses with waves of pleasure. When Adam pulls away, her mouth feels swollen, bee-stung, she thinks vaguely, and no wonder she could kill Gansey with a kiss. And her whole body feels heavy and boneless. Adam gives her a sweet smile and then turns to swing a leg of Arona's lap, the two of them lost in each other. Blue leans back against Gandhi and slides a hand up his thigh. "Do you want me to?" "No," Gandhi murmurs in her ear. "I'm fine." Blue purrs in satisfied agreement and snuggles back against him, twining her fingers with his. She watches Adam and Ronan rock against each other through heavy-lidded eyes and feels another charge of pleasure at the openness on Ronan's face, the perfect arch of Adam's back, the way their bodies move together. "Mm-hmm," Gandhi hums, his chin resting on her shoulder. Blue closes her eyes and floats in the afterglow, breathing in time with Gandhi, accompanied by the low soundtrack and Ronan's choked-off curses and Adam's gasps of pleasure. When the boys are done, the four of them cuddle up close on Gandhi's bed, warm and sleepy. There's hours yet before she has to be home, she thinks. Certainly enough time for a nap. "I never would have thought of that," Gandhi admits softly. "That's why you should let me do the thinking," Ronan says. "I don't want to end up in jail," Blue replies.
But she reaches out and runs a hand in Ronan's head to take the sting out of it. He hums softly and lets her, the brush of his short hair against her palm, another surprising pleasure. A soft, cold breeze wafts over them, and when she looks around, Noah is sitting on the floor in front of them. "Hi," she says. "Join us?" "No, that's okay," he says. "I like to watch." Blue flushes at that, but the others laugh. She holds a hand out to him, and he takes it, and presses a cool kiss to the inside of her wrist. Please smile on his lips. "My boys," she says fondly. "My raven boys." The end. Thank you for listening.